ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to the 67th episode of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. I've got a great interview this time with Brendan Dineen from Arden Entertainment and Atlas Comics. He also writes the Flash Gordon series that I've been raving about for so long. Great stuff. Of course, whenever you talk with Brendan, you get into an interesting discussion about the nature of the industry and the future of comics. So get ready for a fun and very interesting and engaging discussion. Then I review this week's comics, and Gianluca Glazer can't be with me this time for news and previews, so my online friend Steve Davis joins me, and we have a very interesting discussion about what's going on this week in comics. There's always a lot to get to, so let's get to it. Okay, I want to welcome back to the podcast Brendan Dineen, the head of Arden Entertainment and who oversees Atlas Comics, among other good things. How are you doing today, Brendan?
Good, man. Thanks so much for having me, and congrats on the new show.
Oh, thanks. Keeping busy here. Now, the thing I always want to talk with you about is Flash Gordon, because I think you guys do the best Flash Gordon that I've seen in decades, so really enjoying that. What's the status of that? How's that coming along?
Good. We recently had our fourth book out of the series, of the five arc series, and that was The Vengeance of Ming, where Ming invades Earth and takes the fight back to Flash and his friends. And that came out as an original graphic novel rather than the individual floppy issues, and that was very well received. And our final story arc, which will also be an original graphic novel, comes out this fall, and that is King of the Impossible. Takes place after Vengeance of Ming. Basically, to set it up, after the events of Vengeance, Flash ends up back on Mongo by himself with no memory. And it opens up with Flash looking like Conan the Barbarian. So he's been living on Mongo in this country called Tropica for a year with no memory. And his hair's grown out, his beard's grown out. He's been adopted by a clan of sort of cave people, and he's become their leader in a year. The book opens with him leading a hunt for this alien dinosaur for food. It's a version of Flash Gordon I don't think has ever been done before, and I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, it's definitely different, because I don't remember anything like that in Flash Gordon.
I've read all the Alex Raymond stuff, and that's never been done there. I haven't read every single iteration of Flash Gordon, because that would take probably a couple of years. But I don't ever recall seeing Flash Gordon portrayed as a Conan the Barbarian type. And I always loved that idea very much.
Mm-hmm. That's cool, because Flash Gordon's known for pointy helmets and ray guns and things like that. So you're
we'll have that. But don't worry, we'll get to that stuff too. And you know, eventually it's kind of fun because, and again, giving away a few tidbits, what happens is that Ming is back in power on Mongo in King of the Impossible. After the events of the previous four books, his army has been depleted, so he sends his troops out looking for new recruits for his army, and they basically go to all these different new continents, including Tropica, and recruit people, and Flash is one of the people who's recruited for Ming's army, but he doesn't remember who he is. He just knows that he doesn't like Ming, but he doesn't know why. So he ends up in Ming's army, but then slowly starts to realize that Ming is not a good guy. It's a little bit of shades of Gladiator in there, too.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Very cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
So any date specifically or a month that we might...
We're finishing up the art in the book now. I think it's solicited for November or December, so we're hoping it to be a real great Christmas gift, the final book in the Arden Flash Gordon series. It's bittersweet. It's been a great run. It's been a joy and an honor to write the character, but you know, I always had this vision for this run in my head, and this is exactly where I want to leave it. So it's very satisfying to tell the story the way I always wanted to.
Oh, cool. Because I noticed some other company, and we won't mention who, is doing a Flash Gordon, and I always feel like it's just sort of standard stuff. Your thing is much more adventure, much more fun, much more interesting than what I've seen other people do.
Yeah, you know, I was surprised that they chose to do a series at the same time as we were doing ours. I think that was a bad decision, personally. That's their and King Features' decision. I personally wish they hadn't, but I guess the official party line is that there's room for both of us, and we have been doing very well, despite or because of them, whichever it is. And we were doing fine before them. So I'm okay with it. That's the decision of all the people involved, and I try not to get too caught up in what other people are doing. I do my own thing. And we're going to complete our story. I'd love to put out a single book of all five books together. I think that would be a really fun collector's item, like sort of like a Marvel Masterworks. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think ours will stand up to the test of time. You know, I always hope that it will be a Flash Gordon book that fans of the character in the future will look back on as one of the great runs. There have certainly been critics who said it's one of the great ones, and one critic said it's the definitive modern take on the character, which is a hugely complimentary and amazing thing to hear. So I'm just going to stay focused on it, and then I'll obviously continue on with the other Arden books out there.
Now, is that going to be a hardcover, do you think, if you do that?
You know, I'd love to. It's very expensive, so we'll have to see. I mean, I think it would be an expensive book not only to produce but to buy, but if there's a fan base for it, I think it would be a lot of pages, a couple, like, you know, 400 pages, but I think it would be, I think, because there's been a lot of pages, so that would be amazing, obviously. We'll see.
Well, I see a lot of the companies doing that now. I see great big, huge, thick volumes. I think there's a great big Flash volume that Jeff Johns has done.
I'm sure. The Walking Dead books are ginormous. I think those are fun, and I would love to have that in my library, of course. But we'll just have to run the numbers and see. I certainly am interested in that.
Yeah, great. Now, who's doing the art in the final chapter?
Same guy, Eduardo Garcia. We had Paul Green on the first book. The second book was an anthology that has become part of the canon for us. So the stories in the anthology are referenced often. That was amazing. That was J.M. DeMatteis, Joe Kelly, Len Wein, I forget the name, Joe Casey, Jim Kruger. The people in that book were just amazing. And then the final three volumes were all by Eduardo Garcia, who's sort of took Paul Green's style, but then put his own spin on it. And it's been really nice, and it's been great working with Eduardo. He's a consummate professional.
Mm-hmm. I just think the artwork and the coloring and everything is just really powerful and really easy to read. And I just sometimes just sit there and just, wow.
Yeah.
You know, do the reading. Just great stuff.
I agree. It's been a real pleasure working with him.
Great. Now, I guess since Flash Gordon's coming to an end, you've got time for other things coming up.
The Atlas books that we do with Jason Goodman, who is the grandson of Martin Goodman, who is the guy who originally created Marvel Comics, and he was Stan Lee's uncle. So Jason is, I think, technically Stan Lee's cousin. So Atlas, we've had some hiccups, unfortunately, that were out of our control. That's always frustrating. So the books have been late, and that's something that we are aware of and frustrated by, but sometimes things are out of your control creatively. But Phoenix number 6 finally came out a few weeks ago that I write with Jim Kruger. I was very pleased with that run. And again, the critical response has been really nice. Dean Zachary's art is just phenomenal. We go right from pencils to colors, which is just beautiful. The Grim Ghost, which Tony Isabella worked on with screenwriter Steve Susko, with art by Kelly Jones. Sorry, it's been a long week already. It's only Wednesday. Amazing storytelling there. I love the cliffhanger ending on that one. And then Wolf the Barbarian by Steve Niles and Matt Jones, which is why I sometimes forget Kelly Jones's name. All the Joneses, keeping up with the Joneses. Number 6 of Wolf is just finishing up now in the production process, and that'll be out, I would say, early September, finally. So, you know, we'll have those three books all out, finally, the 6 issues. The trade paperbacks are coming out again for Christmas. There'll be the 0 issues of Grim Ghost and Phoenix in the trades, which have been hard to find. And then we're working on Atlas Unified. We had, unfortunately, a creative difference with the original artist, and we're right now interviewing new artists for Atlas Unified. So, again, it's been frustrating dealing with some creative things out of our control, but I know Jason very much believes in that line. I think it's an amazing line of characters and books with a lot of characters, so we're going to keep moving that forward slow and steady. And then, yeah, Arden, we've got a lot of exciting stuff planned for the fall, and then next year, this fall, we're finishing up a couple series, The Devil is Due in Drury, which is a Western thriller with some horror overtones. We've got Mixtape, which is a sort of love letter to 1990s punk rock, rock and roll, the Pixies, Sonic Youth, that stuff, Pavement, stuff that I loved in my early college days. That's a great book. And then we'll be finally getting out the trade paperback of Comeback Kings, one of my favorites, which is sort of what if Tupac, Jim Morrison, Elvis, Bruce Lee, Andy Kaufman, and Michael Jackson all faked their deaths and got back together every now and then to fight crime. It's a dark satire. It's really funny, really fun. It's a, you know, mature reader's book. We're in talks with really well-known actor and a great television studio to do that as an animated kind of an Adult Swim television show. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting. And then next year, Rich Ems, my business partner, and I, we've got 6 books in the works that we're developing, all that will be owned by us, that will also be shopping for film and television. I have, you know, a lot of experience in film and TV, and I've got probably a dozen books and comic books and screenplays set up as either TV shows or feature films. And we've got a book called Mythopolis, which is sort of a horror thriller set in New York City. We've got White Lies, which is a political thriller. Dayfall, which is a science fiction thriller. Crystalis, which is a horror book. Polaris, which is a sci-fi thriller set aboard a submarine. And finally, The War of the Weirds, which is a sort of all-ages family fantasy action comedy kind of thing. So we've got a lot in the hopper. We're trying to take things slow, but also stay on everybody's radar. Unfortunately, we've been sort of plagued with lateness, which is a death knell for many a comic company starting out. So we are aware of it. Like I said before, we're frustrated by it, but we really are determined to get it back on track. So I feel like 2013, which is our 5-year anniversary year, hard to believe we've been around for 5 years, but they say a lot of companies don't make it past 3 years, so we're really proud to be around for 5. I feel like 2013 is going to be our renaissance. We've got sort of a new vision. Flash Gordon will be ending, and our new vision will be starting. We've got a major license, a Christmas license that I can't talk about yet, but when we close that deal, I think it's going to be a huge, huge all-ages Christmas book for us. And we've got a lot of exciting stuff going on there. So yeah, we're a tiny company. It's basically me and Rich on all the art and stuff. It's very difficult to keep up with or to compete with the Marvels and the DCs and even the Images. But, Rich has run a couple companies. He owns a comic book store. I'm a professional book editor. I have lots of movies and TV shows set up. I really believe in this comic book company, and I believe that we're going to be around. So we appreciate our fans so much. We appreciate the support. We appreciate people like you coming in and showing interest and allowing us to reach our fans. So I just thank you and thank anybody who's reading our books very much.
Well, it's great. I hate to tell you, but you're not the first company to fight lateness. It's,
yeah.
That's the nature of the business. Argument always comes down to, do you want it right or do you want it on time? And that's always a tough call to make because comics are a habitual medium.
Yeah.
When we go to the bookstore, we want things to be there so we can take them home. But sometimes I have to think that in today's market particularly, it's better to get it right than it is to fling something out there.
Yeah, but I agree with you. But like when you take months and months to get an issue out, it's just, a lot of times it's not the publisher's fault. It's whatever. It's a writer is late, an artist is late, or, the product, it can be the publisher's fault. It's not, I'm not putting blame on anybody because so many of the artists and writers we work with are late on time. Sometimes it is our fault. It's frustrating. And I want to put out great books and I want to put them on time. I buy books monthly. I buy The Walking Dead. I'm first in line. And when it's a later week or a couple weeks, I get antsy for it. And that's what you want. You want people coming up, showing up to buy your books. And if you're late, if you're weeks late, if you're months late, people lose interest or they forget what happened. And it's not their fault. It's not their fault that they lose interest. It's the onus is on us to get the books out. And we've been remiss, and it's frustrating to me, and I want to fix it. And it's like, we're not ignoring it. We're aware of it. We're painfully aware of it. We're more aware of it than our readers are, but we can only do what we can do. We've got limited resources. We've got limited time, but Rich and I love comic books. We love storytelling, and we are determined to get our company back on track. 2013, knock on wood, is going to be the year that we do that. So I feel like I'm giving a stump speech at the national convention here, but I swear on Ronald Reagan's grave. I really feel that 2013 is our year. We've had some ups and downs. We've struggled. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it. We've had highs and lows, and we are determined. We're stubborn, and we're going to get there. So anybody who's listening to this and frustrated with our lack of timeliness, I get it. We're working on it, and we're hoping to turn it around soon. If not this fall, then certainly early 2013.
I'll have to tell you a funny story. I don't know if you've ever read Mouse Guard by David Peterson.
Yes, and I love that book.
Yeah, I interviewed him one time, and he says every once in a while he puts out a little communication because it takes him a long time because he does the whole book basically by himself. And he puts out a word every once in a while just to let people know that he hasn't died, he told me.
Right.
Which makes me smile because,
Yeah.
It's tough.
And I think that's the thing is if you put out good material, people will find it, but you got to get it out. And if you're not getting it out, it can't be seen. So you can be late and then you get the trade out and people find the trade. And what's so great right now is that Diamond has got a very good relationship with Amazon and Barnes & Noble and they get the books out. I know that we sell our Flash Gordon books sell consistently well with Amazon and Barnes & Noble and mom and pop brick and mortar stores. So the Flash Gordon books have been late, but when we do get them out and we do, people find them and they love them. We just sold out finally thousands of of copies of The Mercy Wars, our first book, and Secret History of Mongo, our second book. And it took a couple of years, but we sold out several thousand copies. And for a tiny publisher with extremely limited resources, that's a big deal. And it's really, and we're probably going to go back to press with those, and maybe it'll be a collected edition. But I'm really proud of us for being tenacious and sticking with it. And, you know, we've made some mistakes. And I often say to people who ask me, you know, if I knew then what I know now, whatever the damn cliche is, I would have done things differently. Absolutely, of course. But Rich and I started this company with limited knowledge of how it all worked, especially me. And I learned as I went along and listened to people and met with people and talked to fans. And you learn, you make mistakes, and you get better, and you hopefully are able to survive to get the next book out. So it's been the most exhilarating and frustrating job I've probably ever had. And I wouldn't trade it in for anything.
Well, as you were talking, I was thinking about how many companies have come and gone within like a couple of years. I was thinking of CrossGen. I was thinking of some other book companies that just, they come on, they're going to show the industry how it's done, and all of a sudden you turn around and go, whatever happened to them?
Yeah, look, it's tough. We are struggling with it. Look, sales are up for Marvel and DC, and you know, people are like, oh, the industry is so strong, and it is for the bigger companies, but for smaller companies like mine, it's difficult because people, understandably, in this economy, they have their $5 and or whatever it is, and they either want to buy Wolverine or Fantastic Four or Superman or try a new book. And a lot of times, and I understand this because I love those characters too, well, they'll buy the book they love, the book they know. And we have to compete with Superman and all those amazing characters. And it's not easy. And I get that. We got to get eyes on book. And so we are looking at different ways of doing this. We're looking at digital, which obviously is the is the hot thing, not only in comic book publishing, but also traditional publishing, which is where my day job is. We're talking about trade paperback originals versus floppies and all different kinds of ways of getting people books for kids instead of books that only 20-year-olds can enjoy. I think that that's an underserved market, which is why we write Flash Gordon with no swear words. And we did the Casper book, and we do other books that are geared towards kids, because I think that's a market that's very exciting and a little untapped. I mean, I have a 6-year-old and a 1.5-year-old, and I like to read my daughter's comics, and there's not a ton of stuff for them.
Right.
So my point is there's different ways of doing this than just the floppy monthly comic store comic book. That's our bread and butter, and I love that industry. I love going to my local comic store every week, which I do. Even if I don't buy anything, I love to look at all the new books and talk to the owners and talk to the customers. But there's also new and exciting things going on with this industry. We're at a paradigm shift for all publishing, comic books, books, magazine publishing, and it's frightening, and it's also completely exciting.
Well, you know, I used to work for a well-known newspaper in the Washington, D.C. area, which I won't mention, and they struggle right now. I mean, they're letting people go. So one of the reasons I'm not there is they gave a certain number of people buyouts, and I ended up taking one of them because the publishing industry is very different. And you touched on something I think that's really important. Is you call them floppy issues, single-issue things. I don't see that as the future, I hate to tell you. When the trades came out first, I was very concerned because I thought comic stores would go under because all these trades would go to, like, Walden Books, and instead it's Walden Books. Books and stuff like that went under, and the comic stores are still going on. And I've noticed you've shied away from some of the monthly comics, and you're heading more towards trades, like, for example, Minx, which I really enjoyed. I got the trade. I sat and I loved reading a longer story at times. I thought that was such a fun book.
Oh, yeah. It's a great book. Minx is a great book. I'm remiss for not having mentioned it. Some of it is just pure P&L. It's how much does it cost to get art and writing and production and printing and distribution? How much does that all cost? And how much are you making back? And it's tough. The margins can be small. And so sometimes it's cost effective to do floppies, monthly books, and then do a trade. And sometimes, like with Flash Gordon, it can get more costly because we're not only paying for the artistry, I waive my writing fee for Arden, but also we're paying King Features and advance and royalties on that character. And that can add up. And so, look, I am the biggest fan of monthly books you'll ever meet. I don't write for the trade, and I certainly don't read for the trade. I like buying a comic book, reading it, getting to the last page, and having a cliffhanger, and then having to wait 4 weeks or 6 weeks for the next issue. I love that. I live for that. I think that that's where comic books do their best work. I think that's why great TV shows these days do that, too. I think that comic books are more aligned with television than with features, feature films in general. That's why I don't necessarily read or write for the trade. I want to get to the end, and I think Jeff Johns does this, Brian K. Vaughan. You get to the end of one of their books, and it's just like, holy cow, I cannot believe it ended there. Like, Brian Michael Bendis, who's a great writer, some of his books, it literally ends, it could just be another panel anywhere in the issue. From what I read all this stuff. But for me, that storytelling, sort of writing for the trade, not interesting to me.
Yeah.
I do agree with you that the trades are a big part of the industry, but what's great about digital is that you can take the same approach to digital as you do to the monthly books, which is you can end on a cliffhanger. And a lot of, in traditional publishing, book publishing, which again, as I said, is my day job, you're seeing more and more of that, where people are doing sort of serial storytelling online on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, where they will post a novella. It's a complete story, but it leaves enough info, and then 3 months later, they put out another novella. So instead of putting out a novel a year, they're putting out chunks every couple months, and readers are loving this, I guess, Dickensian way of storytelling. Charles Dickens did it back in the day, where you get paid by the word, and so he'd publish whatever number of words, and then you'd have to wait for the next issue of the magazine, and that's becoming a new thing in traditional publishing. And some people are afraid of the paradigm shift in traditional publishing and comic book publishing, but I think it's kind of exciting, and I think it is scary, but you also, when things like this change, when there's these sort of paradigm shifts in industries, you have to kind of embrace new things or you're not going to make it. So I'm doing that extremely well with my day job, and now I'm trying to take some of those aspects and apply them to the comic book industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you don't get on the train when it's coming, you're going to get run over by it. And that's the thing I think you're doing smartly, and I think other companies as well, is you have to now look at digital. You have to look at trades as opposed to monthly comics. You've got to do your thing, and you've got to do it smartly. Like newspapers came out every day, you know, and they're weekly ones and stuff like that. And now what's happening with digital, you can go online and get the same content you would buying a newspaper, and you don't have to throw the paper out.
Yeah.
And I think also if you have a digital comic, you don't have to worry whether there's a fold in the spine or what. It's a whole other thing. And the only thing that could change is maybe you got some of the coloring wrong, you have to reissue a PDF file or something like that.
Right. I mean, as a 40-year-old man, I am somewhat bummed by sort of the idea that someday physical books or physical comics won't exist. I have a hard time believing they never will exist, but you know what? 100 years from now, whatever it is, they might not. And that's a bummer to me. I think books in a bookshelf, trade paperbacks and novels, they make a room. Now, that may just be because I'm an old man and not embracing technology. But, you know, I read books on my Sony Reader, and I like reading comics sometimes as e-comics, but I would much prefer a book or a comic book or a trade paperback in my hand, you know.
Frank Miller said that one time he went to the drugstore and he opened up a Batman comic and he fell in. And I thought that was just a wonderful way to describe the comic experience. You know,
because
that was the way it was with me. First comic I ever read was a Batman comic, and he was wearing this glider on his back, and he was in England. He was gliding around this castle so he could look and see what was going on. And I just sat down and said, wow, I got to read more of this. So that's the kind of thing, the comic experience, I think. And I think we're getting more people to read, and I think there's a market for people trying new things that don't have characters that we know so well.
Totally.
So I hope that you guys are going to benefit from that because, you know, let's face it, as much as I love, just like you do, Batman and things like that, you have to be able to come back next month. So you have to, in some ways, reset so that the next person can come along or you get to tell the same story.
Absolutely.
I think what you do is you tell different kinds of stories. You're making changes and doing things that are interesting. And I think people will discover that as you go along. We just have to get the word out.
I mean, look, like I said, we're small. We're relatively young. We've got a plan. We've got these new books in the works that I think also have multimedia potential. We're constantly shifting our plan, how we do business. It's a huge learning curve. And I didn't know that 4.5 years ago. I came into this just with the opportunity to write Flash Gordon. That's how this whole thing started. And 4.5 years later, I've learned a lot. Like I said, we've been up and we've been down, and we've learned, and I think 2013 is going to be a game change for us. Like I said, I knock on wood, I pray that that is going to happen, and I can only hope that people come along for the ride with us.
Well, we'll get the word out and let people know that's coming, because that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm excited.
One last question for you. You had a lot of success with Flash Gordon. Have you ever thought about taking another classic character and doing a book on that?
I mean, like I said, we do have one, this Christmas character that, these characters that everyone knows, they're huge. They're arguably bigger than Flash Gordon in some ways because they are on TV every Christmas. And I can't talk about it yet because we're still negotiating the deal. But if and when this happens and the way we're going to do this, and I'll be writing the book, the take that I have, it's all ages. It's so fun. It doesn't change any of the mythology, but it adds mythology to a huge franchise. If and when that happens, I am hugely excited as a writer, as a comic book publisher, and really, most importantly, as a dad, to be able to bring these characters to comics. And I think they will get a lot of buzz, a lot of coverage, not only in comic book press, but in maybe like, you know, say like Entertainment Weekly and that kind of level. So yeah, look, I love taking older characters and reimagining them. I have been trying to get a gig at Marvel and DC since I was 12. I still can't get through to them. I try. I'm always pitching them new ideas, but I think a lot of what Marvel and DC is doing these days is generating concepts and, you know, these reboots and everything in-house. And they've got the writers they use, and right now, for whatever reason, I can't get through. I hope Dan DiDio is listening to this and gives me a call, but you know, I've pitched that. I emailed Dan, sometimes I emailed Joe Quesada. I'm not shy. I've worked for Harvey Weinstein and Scott Rudin. I run a film division in one of the biggest publishing companies in the world. I'm not shy. I've worked with bigwigs before, but for whatever whatever reason, I can't get through to those two. So if I never get to write a Marvel or DC character, I can live with it, although I certainly would love to get my hands on it. I don't even need one of the A-list. I'll take C-list.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if you reimagine a character, I mean, look what happened to Wolverine. Wolverine was a low-level nobody until suddenly the Uncanny X-Men came out.
Yeah, absolutely.
And bang, it did not.
Well, you know, that's funny. Everywhere. There's a character called the Shroud that Marvel has. He's blind. He's the Master of Darkness. Mm-hmm. And I have the greatest, what I consider, I'm, you know, obviously a little biased, but the greatest reboot or just miniseries. I've been pitching it to Marvel for years, and they're always like, well, that character's doing this, or we're doing, you know, we're rebooting this, or Scrolls are doing this, or what's Civil War this. You know, it's like and someday I pray, again, that they will allow me just to get my Shroud concept out there, because I think it's really fun.
Well, I hope that Mr. Quesada or our Mr. Axel is out there and they will give you a chance at that. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, it's funny. Years ago, I actually interviewed to be Axel's assistant, and I was working for Scott Rudin. At the time, Scott Rudin's this mega film producer, and they offered me the job. But just because of where I was in my career, I turned it down, and I sometimes look back and really regret having passed on that job. So maybe that's why they don't want to hear my ideas, because I turned the job offer down.
Well, you know, there's always a second chance, I hope.
That's right. I love it. Isn't America all about the second act?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Do that. Well, I wish you a lot of success, Brendan, and we'll keep getting the word out and let people know that you're making quality product and they should be buying it.
Thanks, man. Look, even if you can't afford every issue, just give them one or two a shot. I think you'll like it, and we'd love to hear from people. We're on Facebook, Art and Entertainment. My email is really easy to find on the interweb. I'd love to hear from people. I respond to every email.
Great. And we'll talk with you sometime soon, hopefully. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk with you when the Christmas thing comes on.
I hope to be announcing that in early 2013. We're closing the paperwork now.
That'll be fun. Well, looking forward to it. Good talking
to you
as always.
You too. Have a great day.
You too.
On May 30th, 2011, DC Comics announced the historic renumbering of all their superhero titles, and the internet broke in half.
No. It's not true. That's impossible.
Critics and naysayers abounded. Confusion reigned across fandom.
What'll I do? What'll I do? What an unusual view.
Not to mention the first reactions to the Supergirl costume.
I hated her so much. Flames on the side of my face, heaving breaths.
But then the books actually hit, and opinions.
He likes it. Hey, Mikey.
Opinions began to change. The New 52 Adventures of Superman is a monthly podcast where John Wilson,
J. David Weider,
and
Michael Kaiser
take a look at each of the adventures of Superman and his family of characters in Action Comics.
You know the deal, Metropolis. Treat people right or expect a visit from me.
The Superman who appeared 6 months ago could hurdle skyscrapers and toss trucks around. Now it's faster, now it's stronger. How soon before it can't be stopped?
Superboy.
If resolving a situation for him is going to get me out from under these people once and for all, that's a small price to pay for freedom.
Release the Superboy.
Supergirl.
Okay. Giant metal creatures. Falling from the sky. Speaking in clicks and beeps. Father would love this dream.
And Superman.
You could do so much good. We could do so much good.
I am doing good, Lois.
Clark's such a loner. Never really lets anyone get close to him.
The New 52 Adventures of Superman. Available the first of every month on iTunes and at new52superman.libsyn.com.
Faster than a speeding bullet.
More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
Let's have a look at this week's comics. I really enjoyed the Zero issues from DC's New 52 quite a lot, but I want to focus on an important comic book that debuted this week, and that's Guarding the Globe number 1. I talked last time with Phil Hester about this book, and Robert Kirkman enlisted him to make this book a good one, and it really is. It's described as the Guardians of the Globe are back in an all-new, all-exciting ongoing series. Your favorite heroes, Brit, Outrun, Invincible, Robot, Yeti, Kaboomerang, and more, face new challenges of epic proportions and stories by the all-star team of Phil Hester and Todd Knock. As I mentioned before, I recently talked with Mr. Hester, and he said that he likes Brit quite a lot, and I also have to agree with that. He's a seasoned hero, one who's been around the block several times, and he's got an interesting family life. Something about his son comes to bear in this book, and I think you're going to like to see what he has to do with it. Not only does he have to deal with crazy superheroes, but he has to deal with family life that's kind of interesting as well. Like anything in the Kirkmanverse, Image's Guarding the Globe doesn't take a standard path. I like being surprised, and this book did it to me at least 5 times when I was reading it, and I didn't know what was going to happen next, so I liked it a lot. While Brit remains my favorite person in the title, I also like Donald the Robot, Best Tiger, a dog who smokes, well, he is French after all, the new Invincible, and then Outrun. I haven't yet warmed up to Robot, so I'm anxious to see what this book will do with him. Hester's script is fast-paced and engaging, and Knock's art is clear and easily understood. With a big group to keep track of, the two do a dynamic job of making sure we know who's doing what when. Not every team book can do that successfully. Kirkman, of course, is editing the title, so we can be sure this comic will be a fun read. I give it 5 out of 5. Be sure you pick this one up so you can get on the ground floor for what I'm sure will be another great addition to the Kirkman Image cadre of comics. Now, the Zero issues. It was really tough for me to pick out from the New 52 any sort of order that I thought these books should come in, but I'll do my best. The top one for me was Detective Comics number 0, which I'll talk more with Steve Davis about in a few minutes. It had 2 powerful stories, and I think you'd really like it if you pick it up. Animal Man number 0, which I'll also talk with him about, gave it a great run for its money, tying old continuity together in really interesting ways. Then comes Earth 2, which has its winning history going on, and you shouldn't miss it. Action Comics number 0 has an excellent Grant Morrison story in it. Swamp Thing does a great job of informing us what happened prior to issue number 1. World's Finest is another great outing from Paul Levitz and Kevin Maguire. Green Lantern introduces that new Green Lantern we've been talking about, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later as well. Stormwatch reveals an interesting connection between the team and the Demon Knights. I was very surprised. Batwing number 0 has Judd Winnick writing the hero's origin, and Mr. Winnick's around for Green Arrow, setting up storylines that'll probably happen in the future of that book. G.I. Combat has 2 origin stories, the first scripted by Justin Gray and Jimmy Palmiotti, and the second from J.T. Krull. Also, the new Dial H continues its odd ways, with an interesting bit of backstory to it. And, of course, we'll talk about the Phantom Stranger real quickly, too, because it's got some really unusual stuff going on. There's been a lot of discussion about it since the book came out. Good reading all. Also out this week of note were Before Watchmen, the Silk Spectre number 3, Night Force number 7, Smallville Season 11 number 5, and Sweet Tooth number 37 from DC. Boom Studios had Garfield number 5, Hypernaturals number 3, and Planet of the Apes Cataclysm number 1. IDW provided The Cape 1969 number 3 and True Blood Ongoing number 4. Marvel had Avengers Academy number 36, which I'm still sorry is going to end soon, The Road to Oz number 1, which I liked a lot, and Venom number 24. Then Near Death number 11 and Thief of Thieves number 7 came out from Image. Atlas Unified number 0, which Mr. Deneen would be happy to know I picked up, is out. Archer and Armstrong number 2 and Bloodshot number 3 from Valiant came out. Red Circle provided a new version of New Crusaders number 1, as well as Flash Gordon Zeitgeist number 6 and Peter Cannon Thunderbolt number 1 were released from Dynamite. And those are the books that came out this week.
It's time for this week's news and previews, and my friend Gianluca Glazer is otherwise occupied today, so my online friend Steve Davis is with me. How are you doing today, Steve?
Not too bad.
Good, good. I know you're a comics fan. You're not quite into the New 52 the way I am. And I know you don't like Superman being without his red shorts these days.
That's kind of strange to me.
Yeah, I always feel funny that because with Batman, I always feel funny with that, although I'm kind of finally getting used to it, but it takes a long time. So I thought what we would do this time was we'll talk about some of the new stuff that's going on, and you can give me your reaction, and then we'll wrap everything up with me talking about what's coming out on the 12th. So there was a big reveal in this week's comics, and I'm going to be curious to get your reaction to this, Steve. And for those people who haven't read this week's books, the Zero Month is out, and there's a couple of things that happened. Number one, in Dan DiDio's book, Phantom Stranger, there's an interesting reveal about just exactly who the Phantom Stranger is. We've never known that before. But there's a lot of hints and tips that the Phantom Stranger is actually Judas Iscariot, who betrayed Jesus in the Bible. And so there's a lot of reaction online. There's people going, what? There's a biblical character in a comic book? And so there's a lot of people going around saying, I don't get that. I don't understand why we're doing that. I think what he's trying to do is to help him be somebody that needs redemption. And so what the people who have done to him is they have forced him to go through reality and to pick out people who need help, and he gives them spiritual help of a sort. What's your reaction to that, Steve? What do you think about that?
This is something I did not know. I did not know they were going to do this. I have mixed feelings about this. Now, if you ask me this a month from now, I might give you a totally different response. Mm-hmm. But right now, I'm of two minds. On one hand, using a historical figure who is a major part of my religious faith mm-hmm. is something I find a bit troubling.
Mm-hmm.
But from a purely literary standpoint, I do consider comics to be literature, I can see a reasoning in it, because it's something that you wouldn't expect, and the whole idea of needing redemption, well, who would need redemption more than Judas?
Mm-hmm.
So I can see where they're going with it, I think, mm-hmm. from what you're telling me about it. On one hand, I am kind of troubled by it, as I said, but on the other hand, I have to admit, I am curious.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to transpire.
Yeah, now the interesting thing to me, of course, when I look at comics, I don't look at them as real. I look at them as a separate, I don't know if I want to use the word reality, but a separate universe. And so to me, Judas being in there, and of course, we don't really go into all the stuff about Jesus and from a religious standpoint. We just know that this is a guy who has done a terrible betrayal, and it's pretty obvious who it is. But I kind of find this an interesting thing because it gives a little bit of layering to the Phantom Stranger, who has always been sort of this mysterious guy who just pops up and disappears with no rhyme or reason to him. And so I think this is actually an interesting move. Now, Dan DiDio, of course, who's one of the head honchos of DC Comics, is writing it, and this is basically his idea, I understand. But I'm just going to be curious to see what happens. Now, another thing that happens in the book, too, we don't only see the Phantom Stranger's development, we also see the Spectre come about in the New 52. We haven't seen him before this, and Jim Corrigan gets turned into the Spectre, and Phantom Stranger is there for his unveiling or becoming, and it's an interesting thing to watch these two spiritual or supernatural characters develop.
Okay, let me interrupt you with this, because I want you to understand this correctly.
Mm-hmm.
In the new DC universe, is the Spectre just arriving on the scene the first time?
Yes.
Okay, well, see, that's another, not to get off your point, mm-hmm. but that's another thing. We have this whole history of the Spectre, at least for a short time anyway, mm-hmm. of being Hal Jordan,
right,
the Green Lantern. And I was about to say that would have been an interesting conversation between the two, because of obviously he's not Hal anymore. Mm-hmm. But if he had been Hal in the past, if he had a little bit of Hal's essence,
mm-hmm.
what about Hal's feelings on redemption, given everything that he's done as Parallax?
Yeah.
His actions of Parallax. But I guess that's a moot point from what you're telling me.
Yeah. Now, what's interesting, and there's an interesting convergence going on at this time, in the Green Lantern book, Green Lantern, Hal, and Sinestro have apparently been killed at the same time that the Spectre arrives. And I just found that sort of funny because Hal Jordan has been the Spectre in the pre-New 52 days, and now suddenly he's supposedly dead and the Spectre's alive. And I found that really interesting. What's happening in Green Lantern, and you may not know and maybe other people don't know, there's an Arab-American guy who's becoming the new Green Lantern in the book for now. Now, he won't stay there forever, I'm sure. Hal will be back. But Sinestro and Hal have been basically killed by Black Hand. And what's going on is they're apparently in the grave trying to figure out what to do, and the ring finds this guy who is suspected of being a terrorist. And so we're going to see what happens with that character moving forward. He's actually going to be the main Green Lantern in the Green Lantern comic, at least for a while. We don't know how long. He's going to actually end up in Justice League of America as well. Now, in the current Justice League book, Hal had recently left Justice League, so they're not sure what's happened to Hal. And then this new guy's going to show up, and he's going to be in the new Justice League of America, which is going to have Martian Manhunter and Catwoman and a whole bunch of other characters, including Vibe, interestingly enough, is going to be in there. And so that book will be coming out, and it's going to be written by Geoff Johns. It'll be coming out in early 2013. So all this stuff is going on, but they're moving towards that new book with all these things. So as far as Phantom Stranger being Judas Iscariot, I think that's an interesting move. I don't take it religiously in the sense that I think that he was a live character and the real Judas Iscariot became the Phantom Stranger. No, this is a comic book, and so I don't buy into that. But there's a lot of discussion going on online about that, and I was just curious to see what you thought.
Well, yeah, like I said, I still have my two minds about it. On one hand, I do find it a little disturbing because they are playing a little bit with my faith here.
Right.
On the other hand, I can see the literary interest in this because we are taking the one character in history who is absolutely in need of redemption, and this, I guess, would be the perfect character if they want to take that route.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I'm curious about that. You've piqued my curiosity on this.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, Mr. DiDio has written a lot of books as well as being in charge. He's done The Outsiders. He wrote OMAC recently. He's done some other stuff. And so now he's doing The Phantom Stranger. I guess when you're the boss, you get to write whatever book you choose. And so he's doing that.
Yeah.
So anyway, the New 52 is an interesting thing. We're with the one-year anniversary. And maybe while we're on the New 52, I should ask you, I know you're not a huge fan of it. What's your impression a year after the New 52 started? What's your impression of the New 52?
Well, I'm glad that it revitalized the comic book industry as far as retailers are concerned. I'm a big fan of retailers, and the last thing I want to see is the doors shutter, and
yeah.
It's apparently stopped that,
yeah.
From what I'm hearing, and that's great. I've looked through some of the comics. I'm very impressed with the Batman title,
mm-hmm.
Less so with some of the others. The Superman title isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. I still like the Batman one better.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's not as bad as I feared.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I was a big fan of the universe that just was shed aside, so
mm-hmm.
there is that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little concerned about the Justice League title,
mm-hmm.
what you've been saying, and you mentioned this to me before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if these people who are putting together remember the last time they had a Justice League without Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, but did have Vibe.
I don't think that's going to be in their memory. I think this is going to be like the first time. Well, we've got two other Justice Leagues. We've actually had three for a little bit. We had Justice League, and then we had Justice League International, apparently from which some of the stuff is going to move into Justice League of America. And we also have Justice League Dark, which is written by Jeff Lemire, which I really like. If you ever get a chance, by the way, to pick up Animal Man, I think you would enjoy that. That's a great book. Mr. Lemire just does a wonderful job of storytelling. And he's turned Animal Man into like the surprise hit of the whole New 52.
Well, I'm going to show my ignorance here. Is Animal Man played for laughs or played seriously?
Oh, heavens no. This is deadly seriously.
Okay.
I'll tell you a little bit real quickly about what's going on. The thing that fascinates
all
me
right.
is that Jeff Lemire always is interested in families. And so what's happened is Animal Man is not the main character of the book in the pure sense of the word. His family isn't. His wife, who doesn't have powers, and his son, who does not have powers. But his daughter does. In fact, she's got more powers than Buddy Baker does. She's actually an avatar for what they call the red, which is animal life. Swamp mm-hmm. Thing is the avatar for the green or nature. And there's also a thing called the rot, which is black, which destroys both of those. So what's going on, and Animal Man number 0 just came out, they explained a whole lot, Mr. Lemire did, about why she has powers and why the sun does not, and other kinds of things. A lot of that stuff got explained in issue number 0. The issue zeros have been really good in my estimation. I read through all the ones that came out, and they really got some interesting ideas in there. So I'm really happy that they're doing this. Of course, they're doing this in the anniversary to try and get more people to jump on board, because over time you naturally lose people. And this is a chance for other people to go, so while we're on that subject, let me bring another thing up to you that's going on, and people have just started to notice in the New 52. You remember that DC always used to do a who's who in the DC universe?
Right. Yeah, I love those.
What's going on the back of the issue zeros, there's a page which is like a who's who page describing the character, his powers, who he is and how he got there, or she is, or the group is. So that's kind of an interesting thing that people are really liking. They like the fact that we get a little bit of explanation who these people are.
Well, that's good. In fact, I believe I saw those in the Batman's titles, didn't I?
Batman. No, they have not done that in the Batman. This is the first time that I've actually done this. And Batman has not yet come out in issue 0 as of this recording. Detective just came out, and there's a thing on the end of Detective which is really good about it. And I have to tell you, Detective was terrific because it's got a very interesting story written by a novel writer by the name of Greg Hurwitz, who has been writing Batman The Dark Knight, and David Finch, a well-known artist, has been doing that. So I have to say, both very good stuff. If you ever get a chance to look at the issue zeros, it's a good jumping on point. If you haven't read any of the other ones, you might be able to take a gander at them and take a look at it. And I would encourage anybody who's listening to do the same thing. That should be really good. So,
well, let me ask you a question then based on this. Do you prefer in the current storyline, Batman or Detective?
I prefer Batman over Detective, but Detective now is doing a shift. They're getting a new creative team. And so it's going to be a very different thing. Tony S. Daniel was doing it. He was writing and drawing it, and he did a fantastic first issue. At the end of the very first issue, we see the Joker's face, the skin from his face, hanging on the wall. He's altered his appearance such that they don't know who the Joker is in the Batman continuity right now. Now, Mr. Snyder and Mr. Capullo are going to pick that up in the Batman title, so that won't be far away. Keep reading Batman if you want to know what's going on with the Joker. But Greg Hurwitz is a great novel writer. He's a crime drama writer, and he has been writing Batman the Dark Knight, and I'm looking forward to him doing that more. Mr. Finch is actually going to be the one who's drawing Justice League of America going forward, so they're probably going to get a new artist on Batman Dark Knight. But I would really recommend it. It's very good. He's writing. He wrote the first story in Detective that just came out, Detective Number Zero, and I'm reading online a lot of positive comments about it. It's a Bruce Wayne before he's Batman story, and it's a very interesting one where he's being trained in the martial arts, and some interesting stuff happens with the people who are training him, so really good stuff. But Batman, I'd say Batman's a great character, and there's some bad versions of him out there, but overall, I really like what's going on with DC right now.
Well, if they're doing this, as far as the Bruce Wayne before Batman, are they giving any indications about Alfred?
Yes. And funny you should mention that the second story in Detective has to do with Alfred. Alfred, again, this is a pre-Batman story. Alfred is in charge of the Wayne estate. And what's happening is the family on the mother's side, on Martha's side, is trying to get him to give up control of the estate because they see all this money sitting there and they want access to it.
Yeah.
And it's an interesting story. He has to deal with the family about that. So you'd enjoy Detective Number Zero, I think. It's got Bruce Wayne in the front one, and the second one is Alfred. So there's a lot of interesting things going on. I'm always a big Batman fan. For me to see Batman do this well is just so great. One of the things that's going to happen this weekend is in Baltimore, near where I live, both Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are going to be there. And so I'm going to do something I rarely do. I'm going to take a hardcover of the initial issues of Batman and the New 52, and I'm going to try to get both of them to autograph it.
Awesome.
Because it's going to be, I just love what they're doing. It's just fabulous stuff.
Sure. I do it. I can see that. I was just going to mention that I'm a big fan of the Smallville TV series, and that's the comic that I've been reading. Mm-hmm. Originally, the producers of Smallville were going to do a story or show about a young Bruce Wayne years before he becomes Batman.
Yeah.
And they decided, or DC or Warner's one said, no, we're doing this Batman Begins thing. So do something else. How about, we'll do Superman. We're not going to do anything with Superman. So that's how that started. But I always wondered, since I heard that, what a young Bruce Wayne story, before the Bat story, if you want to call it that, would be like.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things in Batman's background, of course, is that his parents were killed when he was a child. Who actually raised him? That would be Alfred, pretty much. And there was a physician, Leslie...
Tompkins.
Leslie Tompkins, yes.
Yeah.
And how would the courts go along with that? He's going to be raised by the family butler? Now, that would be fairly unusual.
Yeah.
I was always wondering, if they were ever going to explain that in the comics or if they would want to.
They never have. They've always just sort of left it that this is what the parents wanted. And since they had the money and threw the money at him, that he was able to always stave off anybody else trying to raise Bruce. It was never really done that. In fact, if you read Batman Earth 1 that was recently put out by Geoff Johns, that book actually talks about Alfred coming in later in the game. Bruce actually is an adult by the time that Alfred shows up. And it's an interesting thing. He actually is the one who's training Bruce how to do martial arts and stuff like that in that book, as opposed to going around the world as he has in the regular comics.
Okay, is this separate, a different story than the Batman Year One that was written like 20 years ago?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's Frank Miller. Frank Miller wrote that, and that turned out really well. They've done that, I think, as an animated one. If you want to go and look up a DVD, Bruce Timm and his group did that as an animated direct-to-DVD film. Really good. Very true to the book. Really liked it.
It is. It is. I have that. That's one of my favorite animated films.
Well, just wait. Just wait, because Dark Knight Returns is about to come out.
Right.
On DVD, and I'm looking forward to that. Everything I see about it is so faithful to the original Frank Miller story that I can't wait to see it.
Well, it looks good, but I'll tell you what I'm concerned about is that Warner Brothers has decided to fold DC Premier or Warner Premier to one of their other operations. So I'm wondering how part two of this is going to turn out.
Well, it's supposed to be that's the last one of this series. But they talk about doing other ones, but it just won't be under Warner Premier. It'll be under other areas. So we'll see. I hope Mr. Timm will still be involved with it because I always like his stuff.
Sure.
Now, you reminded me of something, interestingly enough, while we're talking about news. There's word out now that the WB is thinking about, and this is, of course, under the CW, the network, they're going to do a Smallville-like version of Wonder Woman. where it's going to be called Amazon. Now, of course, it hasn't been formally accepted or they haven't even made a pilot or anything. But they're going to do something along the lines of Smallville, where we're going to get to see Diana Prince, and we won't know if she's actually called that. But she's going to be a younger Amazon learning how to be Wonder Woman, just like Clark Kent was being Superman.
Right. Is it going to be set in the man's world?
But we don't know that yet.
Okay.
So we don't know. It could be on Themyscira. We don't know that. But it's an interesting thing because they did that pilot recently that NBC turned down. It was written by David E. Kelly, which I actually saw. I can understand why they turned it down. It was rather muddled. But it was an interesting thing. They're determined to do something with Wonder Woman. I understand why, because the female characters haven't gotten a lot of play, and they really want to do that. So that would be something interesting to see going forward.
It's a huge property, and it could, if it's done right, it could really be something. But they've been trying to do something live action for a number of years now.
Yeah.
And everything seemed to have fallen apart for some reason or other.
Well, Joss Whedon wrote a script,
right,
and Warner Brothers turned it down even after he rewrote it a couple of times.
He went on to do something small with the Avengers or something. I don't know, some little goofy thing.
Yeah. Now, there's something else you mentioned, too, I want to point out to you, too. The Smallville series, the season 11, they just this week put out a collection that actually includes Batman in it.
Yeah, I heard they were going to bring Batman in. He has sort of like this almost like armor.
Yeah.
Outfit.
Yeah. When he speaks, it's like a black word balloon instead of like when Superman speaks, it got white in the background with black letters. This is his reverse. This is like a black balloon with white letters on it. And he's got a sidekick, a girl, who goes by the name of Nightwing.
I heard about that. That's interesting. Well, you know, the Smallville world is a little bit different than the regular DC world.
Yeah.
So I can see that.
Well, one of the folks from Smallville is actually writing that. So it's very faithful to what we've seen in the past.
Sure.
Do you buy the digital, or do you wait for the comic to come in the store?
I wait for the comic to come out. I'm old. I like to feel the thing in my hand.
Mm-hmm. Well, they just like Batman Legend of the Dark Knight, Smallville Season 11 comes out digitally. I think that comes out as a Tuesday or Wednesday. But anyway, it comes out, and Batman Legend of the Dark Knight, what I buy digitally, and I'm still going to buy the paper because I love it so much. But those are out in paper versions. I think this is a way to double dip. You get your people paying 99 cents to get their portion of the thing. And then when they put it out as a $4.99 comic, then you get those people's money. So this is a way to get a lot of bang for your buck.
Yeah, that's a good way of looking at it.
Yeah. Well, let's change universes. Another thing that happened this week is that Ultimate Spider-Man was given a gift by Peter Parker's mother. Now, I don't know. Are you familiar with the Ultimate line, what's going on with Spider-Man?
My understanding of the Ultimate line, you can correct me if I'm mistaken, is that it's the different universe than the standard Marvel universe that's been going on since the early 60s.
Yeah.
They took the major characters, I guess all the characters really, and they basically rebooted them. And Peter Parker's a teenager again, and the Fantastic Four are fairly young.
Yeah.
They're all youngins.
Yeah. Well, one thing that's happened to Spider-Man is that Peter Parker was killed in the Ultimate Universe.
Okay.
And he's been replaced by a half-black, half-Hispanic guy by the name of Miles Morales. And they recently did a crossover called Spider-Men, in which Peter Parker from the main Marvel universe won over and has interacted with Miles Morales. And that's coming to an end. And what happens is Aunt May gives Miles Morales his web shooters, the Peter Parker from that universe's web shooter, so that he can use that. He's got spider powers, except he doesn't have the ability to make webs. And so he hasn't been able to make webbing like Peter Parker has been. So now she's given him that. And there's a lot of hubbub about that online, too, because it's an interesting thing. It's making him much more the standard Spider-Man in that universe as opposed to Peter Parker. It's clear at this point they're not going to bring Peter Parker back in that universe. They're going to let Miles Morales. I get a kick because he's MM and Peter Parker is PP. They got to have people with two names with the same first initial. I get a kick out of that. And so he is going to be the official Spider-Man in the Ultimate Universe going forward. I'd be fascinated because they've done a lot of the Marvel movies have been based in the Ultimate Universe. If they ever get the Spider-Man license back, will it be Miles Morales in the movies or will it be Peter Parker?
That is a good question. I do not know. I'm not sure they even thought about what they're going to do with it. It's a lot like in the DC universe when they have a cartoon or live action or whatever, and they have the Flash, you know, they're going to use Wally West or Barry Allen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's what they're doing now is they're Miles Morales. They're trying to do something a little more quote-unquote realistic by having somebody who's a little more diverse be Spider-Man. And a lot of people were very upset because why did they have to give this person an existing identity? Why didn't they develop his own identity and let him grow as people would like? But that's not the way that they wanted to do it. And apparently it's worked out. The sales have been very good for Ultimate Spider-Man. So what the heck?
Well, the Ultimate line, I understand, is doing real well anyway. Any of that.
Well, they had to reboot or do the whole thing. The whole point of the Ultimate Universe was to make a universe where there wasn't decades of continuity going on, so people could pick it up and know what's going on. But after 10 years, they found themselves in the same place where the regular universe was. They had 10 years of continuity people had to understand in order to get the book. So tough stuff. So they basically rebooted everything and changed everything around. So that's where the Ultimate Universe is right now. Bet you another 10 years, they're going to have to do the same thing. This is what makes the funny thing for me is that the New 52 was basically that kind of a thing. And a lot of people didn't like it, but it's going to see how the Ultimate Universe does going forward based on this stuff.
It will be interesting.
Yeah. All right, let me go ahead and talk about the books that are coming out this week. On Wednesday, September the 12th, let me run down the books. They are in DC Comics. Your book is going to be out, Batman number 0. Yeah, I can't wait for that. There's also going to be Batgirl number 0, which I really love Batgirl, especially since he's got the black outfit on. I love the black costume.
Let me interrupt you. Who is Batgirl now?
Batgirl is Barbara Gordon.
So it is Barbara then.
Yeah, it is. They did polling and asked people, who is Batgirl? And more often than not, they got Barbara Gordon because she was well-known. She was on the Batman TV series back in the 60s.
Right.
She's been on the comics for decades. We've had several others, and each one kind of diluted the memory of other Batgirls. And so they went back to Barbara Gordon. She's able to walk around again. She's out of the wheelchair. They've talked a little bit about it. We're probably going to find out a lot more about that in this issue number 0. So you might want to have a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, other books that are coming out this week include American Vampire Lord of Nightmares number 4. What makes that stand out is that Scott Snyder is the same guy who writes Batman and Swamp Thing writes that. Then there's Batman and Robin number 0, which shows the new Robin in with Batman. There's a trade paperback for Batman Arkham City, which is based on the video game. There's Batman Arkham Unhinged, which is also based on that game. Now there's a series of books called Before Watchmen that are dealing with the famous Alan Moore, Dave Gibbons books that's called Before Watchmen, The Comedian number 3. That's out. We've also got Deathstroke number 0 and Demon Knights number 0. There's Frankenstein Agent of Shade, which was written by Jeff Lemire previously. There's also the Green Lantern Corps, which has focused on Guy Gardner and Kyle Rayner. Then there's a comic based on Green Lantern, the animated series, which is issue number 6, which I really like. I love the animated series, too, by the way. If you haven't seen it, worth seeing. There's a book called Grifter number 0. There's He-Man and the Masters of the Universe are out, issue number 2. Now, Judas Coin, the hardcover, is written by Walt Simonson. That's based on Batman, too, and has to do with Two-Face. That's out this week. Then there's Legion Lost, which some of the Legion superheroes are in the current era. Then there's Ravagers number 0, a spinoff from Teen Titans. Resurrection Man. Saucer Country number 7, a Hispanic governor is running for president, but we discover she's been abducted by aliens. Don't you hate when that happens? Then there's Shade number 12, Suicide Squad number 0, Superboy number 0, and a new book called Team 7 number 0, all from DC. There's also, by the way, a Batman black and white Joker statue that was designed by Brian Boland, which should be really good. Kind of interesting stuff. From IDW, there's Rocketeer, Cargo of Doom number 2, which is written by Mark Waid, one of my favorite writers. We go down to Image, and there's Hoax Hunters number 3, written by Michael Morrissey, which is a great book. There's also Saga number 6, the second printing. That book's doing very, very well. And there's Chew number 28. It's about a guy who, when he eats food, he can tell where it's been, or if he eats anything, he knows where it's been before. And it's a very interesting and quirky book. From Marvel, we've got Avengers Assemble number 7, which is going on, Captain America number 17. They're reprinting the first two issues of Hit Girl, which is a spinoff from Kick-Ass.
Great movie.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. Well, of course, the comic was fun, too. You've also got the hardcover of Dorothy and the Wizard in Oz, which I always love that good stuff. Then there is also X-Men, of course, number 35 is out. General Comics includes Bionic Woman number 4, which is great fun. I like that book a lot. There's Fanboys versus Zombies, which takes place at the San Diego Comic-Con, interestingly enough. Yeah, you have to see that. It's a crazy book. Issue number 6 of that is out. There's the comic book adaptation of Game of Thrones, number 10. Green Hornet, number 28, which is co-written by Phil Hester, who I interviewed on this podcast last time. Very good book. Harbinger, which is from Valiant, based on the old comic series that the company did before. I like that book quite a lot. It's a good one. Stumptown, version 2, which is a great mystery crime drama. I like that book a lot. And it wouldn't be complete if I didn't talk about Warlord of Mars, number 21, which is done by Arvid Nelson, who I really like. And there's a book, believe it or not, called Whore, W-H-O-R-E. And it's not about what you think it is. I've interviewed the guy who created the book. It's about a guy who's a secret agent who decides he has to sell himself out in order to make money, and he ends up doing some of the craziest stuff you'd ever want to see. It's a great book. It's a graphic novel. It is only $9.99, so it's very much worth the price. And one last thing to mention, Exo Manowar number 5 is out from Valiant too. So that's the stuff that's out this week. Anything else you'd like to say before we call it quits?
No, this has been very interesting. Now you got me wanting to get it out in the comic book store and buy these comics that I haven't been looking at.
Well, give them a try, at least see how you react to them, because there's definitely a lot of good quality product out these days. So I appreciate you talking with me, Steve, and maybe sometime we'll get a chance to do it again in the future.
I'm up for it.
All right, thanks a lot.
All right, good to see you.
And that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks again to Steve Davis for stepping in at the last minute to help me get the news and previews done right. Thanks a lot. Hopefully we'll get to talk with you again sometime in the near future, Steve. Next time I hope to have an interview with Joe Harris, creator of such great things as Ghost Project and Spontaneous, and who recently wrapped up his run on Firestorm. He's got a great project coming out before long, and I'm sure he's anxious to talk about it. So be sure to be here next time. But until then, keep reading your comics.
You'll never win, Joker. I'll always be here to stop you.